It's time for another episode of The Accidental Entrepreneur.
Started selling on Amazon. A friend of mine, one of my roommates from college, she had a decent, she still does, has a decent sized business.
Right.
Selling on Amazon. So I started doing that. I would take my son, he was a baby, and we'd go to garage sales and Goodwill
stores.
Yeah,
so you're a little entrepreneur. You got things going on there, right?
Yeah, I always wanted to have something.
Right.
And so I started doing that. And while I was doing that, I also started, so when Ethan was a year and a half, I met somebody who's a close friend of mine, and her father-in-law owned this business, Inside Credit.
I was going to ask you how you got into this.
Yeah, and I was doing small marketing plans for other businesses.
Okay.
And I was
like
doing
consulting. You were their consultant.
And I was doing copy editing.
Oh, okay.
On the side. So, you know, when Ethan was asleep, I would be able to
do
stuff.
Yeah, you could do it at home and stuff like that, right?
And he was a good sleeper, thank God. Yeah. So then I started doing that stuff. And so a friend of mine said, my father-in-law is looking for help. He has this small business.
Right.
And when he goes away, he has nobody to cover the business. And he also needs help with marketing. So I said, that's terrific. That's right up my alley. And I met him and I loved him. He was a guy in his 70s. He was a retired lawyer. And
so this is your friend's father?
Father-in-law.
But your friend wasn't in the business. They
no,
didn't have any family in the business.
Okay. So she was a realtor. And we work with realtors, landlords.
Right.
And
so she was basically using his service probably.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Okay.
And so I met him. He set me up in my home.
Right.
The information provided in these episodes is for entertainment purposes only. It is not a guarantee of success or to be construed as advice of any kind. You should always seek advice from local licensed professionals before making any decisions.
The dictionary defines an entrepreneur as a person who organizes and manages any enterprise, especially a business, usually with considerable initiative and risk. People often start a business without much choice, perhaps due to a job loss or just being dissatisfied at work, and they come up with an idea they just know can be successful. They become entrepreneurs by accident. That is to say, their success or failure happens by accident, not with intention. My name is Mitch Beinhacker. I'm a corporate attorney and a business advisor. You're listening to The Accidental Entrepreneur, my podcast about how to achieve success on purpose, not by accident. Join me along with our monthly guests where we share our knowledge and help you get a hold of your business. And now on to today's episode.
Hi, this is Jill Beer from Inside Credit. Inside Credit provides credit reports and background searches for the tenant and employee screening community.
Let's talk about, Jill, where you grew up and where you went to school and then how you ended up. Let's say, was Bloomberg your first job or did you work somewhere before then?
No, I had a couple of jobs before Bloomberg.
All right, so let's go back where you grew up and give me some background and then work your way up to Bloomberg because that's when you met my sister.
Yes, yes.
And then we'll take it from there.
Okay. So I grew up in a small town in Northeast Bergen County called Closter, which is actually a bigger town than the one I live in now.
Actually, you know, my best friend from college was from Closter.
Oh, really? Who was that?
Gregory Calvert.
Oh, I don't
know. Another family.
So I grew up in Closter. I went to Demarest High School, and then I went to the University of Hartford, and I majored in English. And I thought that I was going to go into advertising or public relations. That was always my dream. And the reason why I became an English major is because I was told that communication majors couldn't write. So I decided to become an English major with a focus on creative writing. And then when I graduated, I didn't have a path. So I was living in New Jersey. I wasn't living in the city. And I didn't know if I wanted to commute. I had a couple of internships over the summers prior to graduating. And I took little, I would say, not interesting type of entry-level jobs.
This is why you're still in school.
No, right after I graduated.
Okay.
But I was in school. I loved being an English major. In fact, my husband and son joke that I try to bring it into every conversation that I was an English major. I do love being, there were still classes I want to take, which I don't think people had that in other focuses, that they had other classes they wanted to take, but I still had classes I wanted to take when I graduated.
And do you like writing and things
I
like that?
I love writing, I love reading. And then
that all fits.
Yeah, But I thought it was going to be like an advertising PR thing. And then I took different jobs, and I found myself working on Wall Street for a company that did credit ratings for banks.
Okay.
And I was doing marketing for them.
And was that like Moody's or
it was
a similar company?
Bankwatch. Yeah,
it was the same
similar company.
Name. Okay.
It was Thompson Bankwatch, and they don't exist under that name anymore.
No. Okay.
And then from there, I went to Bloomberg, and I went into their radio and TV syndication department.
Oh, okay.
And I really didn't have a background in radio or TV, except I liked to listen and watch.
Right.
And
so what did you do for them?
They would...
You weren't on the air.
No. I definitely have a face for radio. So I went to... I would go to... There would be somebody who would sell originally the syndication who would sign on radio stations and television stations to put Bloomberg content on the air.
Okay.
And then I would be affiliate relations. And then they would send me to go out to train them how to use Bloomberg, to make sure they liked it. And it was all about relationships.
And it was
building.
All radio and television.
Radio and television.
Bloomberg
and newspaper
content.
Also, yes.
Bloomberg content, okay.
And at the time, they would also get the Bloomberg terminal, and I would teach them how to use the terminal so it would give them more content.
Right.
And it was added bonus for them to be able to use the Bloomberg to produce more pieces.
Right. And I guess in those days, or maybe it's still the same way, but the way they do it is differently. A lot of people in the area know Michael Bloomberg. He ran for mayor. He was mayor of New York for a long time.
Yeah, back then it was 1994.
This is a long way back. But they're basically selling investment analysis, right? They're selling information about different stocks or things? Or was it more like the data feeds that came from Wall Street or stuff like that in those days?
There
was no internet, really.
Shows.
Okay.
It was the beginning of... It was
very early.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there were, we would either have a show that we would sell,
okay.
Or it would be like the Bloomberg Business Update, and it would be like a 2-minute update. So
investment news.
Right.
Okay.
You know, but we also had personal finance pieces.
Right.
So depending on what kind of station, if it was a total news station, then you'd probably have it more geared towards the markets. But if it was a news talk with a little bit more talk,
right.
They would do more personal finance.
So a lot of it was customized based on the client,
absolutely.
The customer?
Absolutely.
Oh, that's interesting. So back in those days, they had a machine, a Bloomberg machine that you would buy. Now I guess it's all software, right?
Mm-hmm.
And from that, they would get information, right, to analyze, pick a stock or make recommendations,
exactly.
Or get news feeds and stuff like that. Okay. All right. So there you are.
So I would go all over the country, which I loved because I was able to see the country where I wouldn't have been able to otherwise. And
you had to travel a lot for them?
Yeah, I loved it. I got to go all over the country and go to different radio stations and see how they were run. And it was so interesting about the power of radio is that, you know, and same thing with podcast, you would be in like a hut.
Right.
And then some would be in beautiful
yeah,
big
just
buildings.
Yeah, varied from radio station to radio
station.
It's
amazing. Station,
right.
And I love that. I love that.
Yeah.
You know, smoke and mirrors.
Right. Yeah, I don't have a studio. Here we are in a conference room.
Exactly.
And you probably can hear it a little bit in terms of the tinniness of the noise. We don't have a perfect studio. But yeah, a lot of it's portable. So it depends, really, I guess, on their budget, right, and what town they're in. And
exactly. In the market. Like, you know, L.A. had the most beautiful radio stations. And those were also big stations.
Right.
But you could have been in a smaller market. I remember Springfield, Illinois. I would be driving down a road and, you know, no GPS. I would get these
right.
directions
none
off
of
MapQuest or Avis would have
right.
like cards. It was such a different world.
Right.
And
you get to some little studio somewhere, right?
Right. And the guy probably could not shower or
right.
whatever.
Exactly.
It was just like, so, you know, here you'd be in a suit because you'd be wearing what you'd wear for one. And
right. They wouldn't be dressed that way.
No, not at all. And they think I was some city slicker.
Right,
hardly.
From New York.
Exactly.
That's funny. Okay, so how long were you at Bloomberg?
I was there for 10 years.
Oh, okay, long time.
So I was in radio and media, in radio and TV syndication for about 6 years.
Okay.
And then I went into event planning for them. And they
event planning like their events? Because I remember like Karen took us to the Christmas party when I was at the...
No, I didn't plan those events.
Those
were
ridiculous.
Great events, yeah.
Those are crazy.
Those are great. No, we would do seminars.
Oh, okay.
That would be set up for their clients. So for the
like promotional events for the...
Well, no, they
for
would
them?
Be educational events for their clients.
Got it.
So for the money managers and the bankers and the brokers, and where they would be set up in hotels all over the country.
So you, so they're your customer, and you're doing the event to promote their services to help them with their customers.
And to teach, to teach Bloomberg
to
their own customer base.
Got it. Okay.
And it's another touch.
Yeah.
So it's an in-person.
It's a service.
Instead of
you're
going
providing
out,
them the machines, you're also providing them the training.
Exactly. So they would have. And this way you can get a lot of bang for your buck because you could see a lot of clients at once if you had it in a downtown hotel.
Right. Got
so
it.
So I then also traveled all over the country in Canada and also the Caribbean. And I would help set up these. I wouldn't teach anything.
Right. No, you're just the setup person.
I was just
setting
the setup
it all up.
Person. And that was great also. And I got to learn that side of the business. And then my final couple of years at Bloomberg, I was actually selling the core product.
Okay, which is
the box
the,
or
the Bloomberg
software.
Or the software. Got it.
And then I would go out to clients and visit clients.
And I guess,
and I was
when
New
did
Jersey.
My sister get to Bloomberg? When did you meet her?
I met her, I think she was there a couple of years. I got there in 94, and then I left in 2004. But she...
She had to be around that time, because I graduated law school in 92, and she was probably just getting out of college at that point. I graduated college in 89, so she was probably just starting college at that point.
Right. So it was, I remember I was still in radio. I believe I was still in, I don't remember where, sometimes I remember where I was, sometimes the memory is gone. 53.
Yeah, right, at our age.
So.
Early signs of dementia.
Exactly. Plenty of that.
So, okay, so that was, you said, about 10 years.
I was 10 years, and then I left when I had my oldest son.
Okay.
And then I wanted to work. I actually really wanted to go back to work. I wished my husband had said to me, you need to go back to work.
Right.
Because it was hard to be home after...
Yeah, after working,
I was 37, 38, and it was my first child, and I was used to working my entire life. I've always worked.
Right, you didn't know what to do with yourself.
I didn't know what to do, and I definitely had postpartum, and I was hoping that he would say to me, go back to work, we need the money.
Yeah.
But
you would have gone back to Bloomberg, you think?
Yeah, I would have. Yeah. You know what? He didn't like the idea of both of us working in the city.
Yeah, right.
At the time, and it was post 9/11.
Right, yeah.
So,
sure. People make different decisions after 9/11.
Exactly. And he was traveling for Bloomberg, and he covered the Midwest. So he wasn't around. So it was a long day for me. I didn't have family help, and had this baby, and I was postpartum, and my husband was away three nights a week. And that we were living in Essex County at the time. We were living in Millburn.
Okay.
And I was always looking for something to do, but it was hard.
Yeah.
And then we moved up back to Bergen County, where we're both from. And I would start little things. I had a blog for a while, and that was before people were really monetizing over blogs. But I had a decent readership. And then
What were you writing about on your blog?
I was writing about... Like it was kind of like Seinfeld-esque, but in parenting or being around or
just whatever
my
you
observations
were.
Or
is it still online?
No,
took
I wish
it, down?
It was because I'd probably laugh at it now.
It's funny now, probably then starting a blog was harder, right? Not the average person could just plug in and get going.
And there was
going.
No Facebook, so to promote yourself was just word of mouth. But then I always had that hesitation. Do I want to put it out there? Do I want people to know about it?
Right, exactly.
Do I want to be open for criticism? It was a whole thing. But I wanted to also make money. I was used to making a good salary and then having one salary. You know, fortunately, we always lived within our means.
Right.
But I also liked having that independence.
Yeah, of course.
So I actually started selling on Amazon. A friend of mine, one of my roommates from college, she had a decent, she still does, has a decent sized business.
Right.
Selling on Amazon. So I started doing that. I would take my son, he was a baby, and we'd go to garage sales and Goodwill stores.
Yeah, so you're a little entrepreneur. You got things going on there, right?
Yeah, I always wanted to have something.
Right.
And so I started doing that. And while I was doing that, I also started, so when Ethan was a year and a half, I met somebody who's a close friend of mine, and her father-in-law owned this business, Inside Credit.
I was going to ask you how you got into this.
Yeah, and I was doing small marketing plans for other businesses.
Okay.
And I was
like
doing
consulting. You were their consultant.
And I was doing copy editing.
Oh, okay.
On the side. So, when Ethan was asleep, I would be able to do
stuff.
You
could do it at home and stuff like that, right?
And he was a good sleeper, thank God. Yeah. So then I started doing that stuff. And so a friend of mine said, my father-in-law is looking for help. He has this small business.
Right.
And when he goes away, he has nobody to cover the business. And he also needs help with marketing. So I said, that's terrific. That's right up my alley. And I met him and I loved him. He was a guy in his 70s. He was a retired lawyer. And
so this is your friend's father?
Father-in-law.
But your friend wasn't in the business. They didn't have any family in the business. Okay.
So she was a realtor. And we work with realtors, landlords.
Right.
And
so she was basically using his service probably.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Okay.
And so I met him. He set me up in my home with the old-fashioned fax machines. This is like 2006.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's like 2006. And a fax machine. I had my own phone line.
Right.
And he taught me how to process these credit reports for, like I said, tenants. We don't do it for tenants. It's tenant screening for landlords, property managers, and real estate agents.
Got it. Okay.
And then
now it must all be online, right? You go to a website, you put everything in, and you're done. Then it was probably you had to fax something out to get information.
Well, he was big on faxing. He really was. He was more old school. He didn't even really wasn't into email.
Right.
He had it on it wasn't even on a site that was like at insidecredit.com.
Right.
It was kind of like AdoptOnline account.
.net.
And and
that was in 06?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so the internet's already robust at that point, but
he's
older.
He's an older guy.
Yeah.
And so I worked with him for a while. I was doing marketing with him. And then, unfortunately, 7 years ago, he was in his 70s. He passed away suddenly.
Suddenly.
And they said, do you want to buy? They said to my husband, do you want to buy the business?
So you'd basically been doing work for him and doing marketing for him and helping with that stuff.
And I was the person who knew the business the most. And it was perfect.
And you said there were no family going to take over the business
or
anything like that.
And I had two little kids at this point.
Right.
It was 7 years ago. So I had a seven-year-old and I had an eight-year-old and a six-year-old.
Right.
So it was like, this is a perfect home business.
Sure, because you don't need like brick and mortar and people.
No.
And it could all be remote if you needed people, right?
Exactly.
Okay.
So it was just me.
Right.
And we changed things pretty quickly. But I got a really good education, even in the beginning of buying the business, about buying a business.
Right.
And I appreciate that I didn't have to start a business up. That, to me, is really hard.
Of course.
To start.
That's why people do franchises and stuff, because they don't know how to get started. It's not always good, but, it was more fortuitous because you had been, working with him and got a chance to learn the business almost by happenstance because you got introduced to him. And then it just kind of came together.
Exactly.
That's often how that's why it's called the accidental entrepreneur.
Exactly.
Because people accidentally become entrepreneurs all the time.
Exactly.
For situations. And it did. It just fit with what you were doing. You didn't have to go to a place. It wasn't like you had a manufacturing facility you had to take over, right?
But then I brought in my more modern
technology stuff, right, that you had.
Immediately, we started accepting credit cards. He hadn't accepted credit cards.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, how do you do it? That's all online, right? Where people pass cash through the computer to you?
Yeah, I mean, he would have to have me work an entire day for him to do the billing.
Yeah.
Now, I do some invoicing and monthly billing, very few, but most of it is...
They pay right away, right?
Right away.
Yeah.
I mean, he'd be chasing people. I'm not in the business.
Somebody needs a credit check, they pay ahead of time, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, it's truly a B2B, and we're compliant with the Fair Credit Reporting Act, the FCRA.
Yeah.
So part of that is tenants, we have to work directly with, like I said, the landlord or the real estate agent as opposed to the tenant, even though most of the time the tenant pays.
Right, through the landlord or they pay you directly.
Or
they pay for credit
portals.
Check, sure.
So through that, I've done their website over twice.
Okay.
I've created portals, secret links that are not public. So I would then share those links with clients depending on their pricing structure.
I
create a different pricing structure.
Sure.
And I've also created an education module. So I visit the customers and I teach the agents how to read a credit report.
Right.
Because
they
the credit
don't even
bureaus
know how to do
don't
it.
Want it to be easy. It's not easy to read.
Very difficult.
And that's a big part of what I do also.
Yeah, just because you get a low credit score or high credit score doesn't mean that your credit's good. You got to know what you're looking at, what it means, right?
Yeah, I use the analogy that when you weigh yourself at home, you're one weight.
Right.
And when you go to the gym, you're another weight. And when you go to the doctor's office, you're another weight. Yet your pants feel the same
right.
everywhere you go. And that's how it is with credit scores. The TransUnion could be 5 points above or beyond
right.
Equifax or Experian, but the guts?
Yeah, it's the same material. Process it a little differently.
And it looks so FICO.
Right.
Everybody says, FICO, is it a FICO score? We use a FICO score.
Right.
And FICO is a private company.
Separately. Yeah.
So we subscribe for our reports are through TransUnion, and they have a FICO score. But there's a guy wearing a sweatshirt that says FICO making a lot of money, and
right.
they have proprietary algorithms that they create to get these scores.
Yeah. And what do? They sell that data to somebody?
They sell the data,
score?
But then that's also different levels of there's a FICO score 6, 7, 8, 9. So the highest level is FICO 9, so it's kind of like iOS 13. So we subscribe
okay.
to the highest level. Inside Credit has a 9. We do the highest one.
So what would make you subscribe to a lower one versus a higher one? It's just a different algorithm?
It's a different algorithm. We chose the highest one because if you look at a credit report, sometimes somebody may have a collection, a medical collection.
Right. Okay.
And
meaning they owe money to a doctor or a medical facility or hospital, something right. like that.
And then they turn it over to a collection bureau.
Okay.
But that could happen for any type of collection.
Right.
But what I like about this FICO 9 is they weigh a medical collection less than another collection.
Right.
Which to me makes so much sense and is more fair to the consumer.
Yeah.
Because
people get into medical problems all the time. They were sick. They go in the hospital. Their insurance covers it, but doesn't.
And then
end up with $25,000 bills.
And the communication
breaks down all the time. They don't get the bill. Right.
So is it fair?
I've had that
to
happen
them?
Where I get called by a collection agency. I don't even know what they're talking about half the
exactly.
time. Right.
So I like this FICO 9 because it makes it a little less. It doesn't affect them as much. And a collection is still going to affect you.
Right.
But it's not going to affect them as much.
It's interesting because I'm sure a lot of people go and they apply for a mortgage, they're buying a home, and their FICO score comes back. They don't know about FICO 6, 7, 8, 9. This is your credit score. Oh,
right.
It's not high enough. You can't get the higher rate. And they don't even know what that means.
Right, and they don't even know what's on their credit report.
Right.
So
even if they got a copy of it, they probably couldn't read most of it.
Right.
I've seen these things.
They're
crazy.
So a lot of times people will ask me if I could help them read their credit reports.
Oh, okay.
And not from a business perspective.
Right, like friends or something.
I think that's actually
a conflict of interest.
Probably a little bit. But I will help them and help them decipher the report.
Right.
So the report comes, we get the report, and then what our company also does is we put together our own summary. It's not automated. We put together a summary of all
okay.
the things that are important to landlords and property managers.
Right.
And then we put the summary page on top. So that's easy for them to read.
Right.
And also, we make our services available that we will talk through. We'll talk to the agent or the landlord to help them understand the report. Because if somebody went through a tough time and went through a bankruptcy, but you could see that in the last, let's
that
say,
may be why they're renting. I mean, a lot
exactly.
of times your renters aren't going to have 800 credit scores.
Correct.
Most cases.
Right. And they're not necessarily, and the credit score really depends upon where the demographic is. So we
right.
handle all over the country.
Of course.
And I would say that, you know, over 50% of our business is in the metropolitan New York area just
right.
because
a
that's
lot of,
where it's situated.
You're here, right.
And because I know this area and the people who work for me know this area, we know that some areas, some demographic areas are going to take a lower credit score.
Right.
They kind of need bodies, right? They need
right,
people
of course.
In the places. But what happens is I explain to the agents, and that's when this educational component comes in, where I explain to the agents that somebody may have hit on rough times for whatever reason.
Right.
And they have had a bankruptcy, and it's still there. But you can
yeah, 10
see
years.
That since then,
right.
they've gotten their act together.
Yeah.
That they're paying their bills on time.
Right.
They're not having late payments. They're not taking every offer from Lord & Taylor and Victoria's Secret and Jared
right.
Jewelers.
Right, they got 22 credit cards, right, sure.
So you see they've got, and I said, that's it. Every report tells a story. And that's what we try to do. We're unbiased.
Right.
But we want people to understand you can't just go by the score.
Right. That doesn't
tell
the whole story.
Whole picture.
Right. Doesn't even come close to telling the story.
No.
Right. Absolutely. So a lot of these processes and the way you're doing it, is this different than the way he was running his business when you took it over? Like you've kind of revamped your whole process and how you do it?
Yes.
Completely.
But there's some things that, first of all, I loved him. It's ironic. We shared the same birthday.
Oh, that's funny.
I say to his kids, his daughter-in-law is one of my closest friends, and he's always with me.
Yeah.
And his wife, who also I talked to a lot through this process, you know, when we bought the business, one thing that I learned is when you buy a business, and we were advised to give like 1/3 of the cost up front and then do
right.
the rest in payments.
Yeah, because you might not keep most of its customers,
what
right?
What if we go bankrupt
right,
with it
or course.
Whatever? And I was fortunate enough that I was able to surpass that
right.
time period.
And mostly you're buying the customer list and the people that he works with, right?
I mean, already the vendor relationships
yeah,
that we have.
Right. So if you lose all those, then you've paid for nothing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it was great because I was able to keep in touch with his wife.
Right.
Who I also know because a family friend, and we've become closer. But I felt that it was a way of Steve also like watching over, and he was
yeah.
there, and I remember one of the first when I was selling for him, he had handwritten me a fax, and until I just redid my office, I had it hanging on the wall and I'm pretty sentimental, so I love that. And you know, people still say, I remember when Steve was doing it, and he wouldn't even do an official summary page.
So no, you did that.
I created templates also.
Hey, some of your customers are still his customer, original
yeah.
customers?
Well, so Inside Credit's been around since 1988.
Okay.
And
so he started the company?
I think he bought it pretty soon after somebody else when he retired.
Okay, I got it. But it was still, there was obviously no internet in those days. It was 92 is when
oh,
I think I
goodness.
First heard about
his
the internet.
His website was so funny. His website, and then even, like I said, I redid the website, and then I redid it over again. So and I've changed it to reflect what's out there.
Right.
And we can't compete. You know, we have competitors that are much bigger, and their buying power of credit reports is much larger because their volume is larger.
Oh, so they pay less?
They pay less.
Per report that's pulled?
Yes.
Because of the volume?
Yes.
Oh, I was going to ask you that. So it is a competitive business.
It's very competitive.
And they're large companies. But they don't get the, right, if you're dealing with a landlord that's local and he's got, you know, a large building, I would think he gets more personal attention
well,
and
that's
than,
what
from
differentiates
you.
Us
yeah,
is
okay.
the customer service.
Right.
And so our competitors do everything online.
Yeah.
Where we'll
you don't deal with anybody.
An email.
Right.
They do everything online, and we'll accept an email, we'll accept a fax. We also are part of .loop, which is a real estate cloud service.
Okay.
A secure real estate cloud service. There's
is that like LoopNet? LoopNet's a real estate listing service, but
oh, so .loop. Yeah. Yeah, so a lot of them, like Keller Williams uses .loop.
Okay.
I think some Remax use
.loop. Like an MLS for commercial real estate?
No, it's just a cloud service, so you
okay.
can send something securely
oh,
to somebody.
Oh, it's like a Dropbox, but for
exactly.
commercials.
Exactly.
I got it. Okay.
And
yeah, because you are dealing with personal information. You have certain HIPAA privacy
oh,
rules, things like that,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, so, I mean, even when we changed so I had to change the LLC because he had the LLC. I wasn't buying the LLC.
No, you bought the assets of the company.
Exactly.
Right, that's
so then
the way
I
you
had
do
to
it.
Set up my own LLC.
Right.
So it was amazing because I really got this
you learned
education
that whole thing. Yeah.
of how to do it. And when I set up that, when I set up the LLC, I had to change certain things within.
Right.
But I basically kept it the same. But I had to be reevaluated by the vendors. So they
oh,
would
because it was almost like you're starting a new business, sort
exactly.
of. Right. Okay.
But so they would come to my office, make sure that there were locks on all my doors to
right.
my office.
Sure.
That I had
because you have private information.
Exactly.
Right.
That I had shredders with locks. I had file cabinets with locks.
Yeah.
They wanted to make sure I answered the phone.
Yeah, I remember
with
my old firm, one of the guys was a collections attorney, and we would use some of these services for skip tracing and you know things
mm-hmm.
like that when people don't pay their bills. And yeah, they would come visit our office. They wanted to see this, is this what? And they would ask all these questions. People get access to this and that.
Exactly.
So it was a little crazy. Yeah.
Right. But I have to do that even with the people I hire.
Yeah, you have liability, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, whether they have to be bonded or something,
no,
or
they don't
just
have
to background
be bonded.
Checks.
I do background checks.
Of course.
We do non-disclosure.
Yeah. Yeah, because they have access to this information.
Mm-hmm. And they use our, where in the beginning, I would have them have access to the portals for the vendors, like for TransUnion or Experian, but now I give them their own laptops. I just feel it's easier, even though it's secure, those portals are all password protected.
Right.
I feel much better, and I can put my head on the pillow knowing that they're using our equipment.
Yeah, so you can put all your security mm-hmm. stuff on your laptop or whatever you
exactly.
do.
Exactly, and I don't have to worry about, oh, if their husband or kids are using their equipment. They're not going to use our equipment.
Right.
They'll use their own home equipment.
Right, and they got kids on the laptop.
Exactly.
And stuff. So, okay, so that was 06 that you bought the business, you said?
07. No, 07? No, 7 years, 12.
Oh,
right after,
so
right
it's
during
been 7
hurricane,
years. Okay.
Right, like around Hurricane December.
So maybe
1st.
06 was when you started working with him,
yes,
right?
Yes, 06.
And then he suddenly passed away in 12?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay, so it's been like 6-7 years.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and you told me that you have like a, what's, yeah, it is where the passion or a fire for entrepreneurship, right? So
yeah, I mean, I can't imagine, if I needed to, I would have no problem going into the city and working full-time for someone else.
Right.
I can't imagine, only because it's been 15 years since I've done that.
Right.
And working in that type of...
It's very wearing on you, you know, all the commuting. You don't realize it when you're doing it. But you were almost doing, at the end of Bloomberg, you were in sales, right? You were selling
oh,
their stuff. So you,
I believe everybody is in sales.
Kind of,
in
yeah.
In any which way you do.
Right.
Teachers sell.
Correct.
And
I think the people that say they're not in sales are a little bit in denial.
Absolutely.
Know? They don't realize... That if you don't sell, you kind of get let go eventually.
Right. But I would do any, I mean, if I had to, in order to help support my family, you know what? I would scrub toilets. I would flip
right,
burgers.
Of course.
I have no problem. I don't have a pride issue.
Right.
And even, in fact, a couple of years ago, about 2.5-3 years ago, I became a notary because a
yeah.
friend of ours was telling us that he was making a couple of grand a month on top of his full-time job.
Right. Just... Providing notary services.
To help put money away for college. So I became a notary, and I never really followed through. But then somebody found my name, and I've been doing some of that.
Oh, have you? That's funny. And it's surprisingly not very difficult, right? You send in the card, they send it to your senator or something, and then they have to sign it, send it back.
Yeah, and then I got it back, and
yeah.
I mean, I'm not really
doing anything.
You ordered
a stamp and the thing. Yeah, I have notary. Attorneys are notaries by law in New Jersey, not every mm-hmm. state. But because sometimes I notarize documents that have to go out of state, I got the stamp and the whole...
Yeah, so
thing.
It's a great, I mean, I, like I said, I hadn't really done it, but then somebody saw my name on one of those sites, and
yeah.
I've done it a couple of times. I don't really have the time to pursue that.
Of course.
And also, I really struggle with adult ADD, so it's like I'll be in that, and then I'll be like,
right.
oh my God, a butterfly, and then I have my credit reports. And,
yeah, well, that's what, you know, the entrepreneurial mind. So what would you say, okay, so you've been doing this for a while, and you really have been... you know, in your own business for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
So what would you say you've learned as compared to, so you spent a good portion of time in corporate America, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you spent a good portion of time really like on your own.
Mm-hmm.
So what would you say as an entrepreneur, as a business owner, seeing that this is an entrepreneurial podcast, would you say like you've learned, you know, things that have opened up your eyes, like you're like, wow, you know, I didn't realize that you think people... it would be valuable for somebody to know who's going into business for the first time?
I think...
That was kind of a loaded question.
I
apologize.
It. But there are two things. I think one thing that I even said to you on the phone when we spoke is that not everybody who owns a business is an entrepreneur.
Correct.
And I also believe you can't do everything as the business owner.
Right.
And even though you have to spend money to make money, which I know it sounds trite, and when
yeah.
things are... tight financially, it's a hard thing to do.
Right.
But I've also learned recently that when I'm a little more flushing cash and business is coming in, that's when I need to invest in marketing and
right.
sales, because it's harder when like the crap hits the fan to then invest because
correct.
I have people.
It's usually the opposite, right? People want to put money in when they don't have the money, and then things get well, good, and then they stop doing
right.
the marketing.
So,
that's when they should be doing
so
it.
So I'm doing the opposite. And
right, that's smart.
And I feel really good about that. I also realized that I've had to outsource.
Right.
So I made my original website myself. but that would take time after doing something else.
Of course,
else.
It doesn't make any sense.
So it was an investment, and what's my time worth?
Right, I think people don't. Have you ever, did we talk about this on the phone, the book E-Myth? You've ever heard of the book
I've
E-Myth?
I've heard of the book.
Yeah, so Michael Gerber, it's a whole series now. I think it's like E-Myth third edition now. They've written one for lawyers, they've written one for different occupations. But it's the idea of, right, if you work for your business and you really can't step away and develop your business and say, hey, you know, I should have this person doing this and this person, and I'll focus on business development and growing the business. If you're doing everything, then you're just employed by a company you also happen to own at the same time.
Exactly.
It's like you have a job. So you need to be able to say, okay, no, I don't need to go to work today, right? Because I can go work on the business while everybody else from wherever they're doing it runs the business. That's really what, it's almost like a, what's the word? Not a stepping stone, but it's a phase, right? So you go to phase two or phase three. If you're really an entrepreneur where you own the business, and it sounds like to me like you've really gotten to that stage and you're getting to that stage, a lot of people don't get there where they're really the entrepreneur. Like that's why your comment is accurate that people who are in business are not necessarily entrepreneurs. They're really just employed by themselves.
Exactly.
Right? It's really when you get to the level, like you said, where you said, listen, it's not worth my time to rebuild our website. It's worth my time to go and meet with a new customer who's got 300 units and we can do work for them every month and then let them build the website.
Exactly.
A lot of people I don't think get there. So that's good advice.
Right. And so I do employ a couple of people and...
But they're virtual. They're not in an office, are they?
They're in a home office.
Right. Not your office.
No, but right. I think that my...
You don't need them to be, right?
I don't need them to be, but I have to say I would like to eventually... have a home, a base. I mean, people could come work in my, which is a real office. It looks like an office in my home.
Right.
And it has separate entrance.
You have room for people?
And I have room for a couple more people. Ideally, I would like to have a separate space because I feel that there is some chemistry and symmetry.
Yeah, FaceTime is important, right?
People need that also.
Yeah, we're all human beings. We kind of need to interact a little bit.
And I think it works in some, I think having, I don't think it's all or nothing. I don't think it's either all remote or all in person. I think there needs to be flexibility. And one of the things I love about this business, which was so great for me, was having a business for women who are at home raising their kids,
right,
that they're able to work on it while they're at home. And but at the same time, you need to be able to answer a call without a child screaming in your ear.
And of course.
I've had to set up things, you know, like, for example, we use a voice over IP that is through an app. And so I don't want them using their cell phone to call back people.
Right, because if they use the app, it looks like it's in your system.
And plus, then it doesn't come up and they don't have to worry about somebody from this office calling their house.
Right.
On a call, you know,
a caller ID. Right, exactly.
So I've set up those type of things. So for example, I told you there's an educational component where I go and visit offices and teach them. So when I'm doing that, and that's also, it's educational, it's marketing, it's getting us out there. So I, to me, when I have people working, I want to be out selling.
You're right.
I don't, it's great that I could also go to a doctor's appointment or what have you.
Right, but that's not
the best to me.
No.
That's a waste of money.
Right, of course.
I'd rather be out there going exposure, getting more business while they're working. But I also like the fact that we're helping women have that independence within their own family unit. I mean, I would have a guy work for me. It just hasn't come up yet.
No, because a lot of there's not too many. I met a stay-at-home dad this weekend, actually. But yeah, there's not a lot of them today.
So I'm happy to do that. But I like that idea. Again, I knew what I needed.
Right.
I needed
you want to help the women here. Yeah.
Right. I wanted to be able to go into a TJ Maxx and put down a few dollars without having to be like, oh my God, is he going to see the Amex? What's he going to think?
Right. Yeah. You want to contribute too. And sometimes even though as the mom stay at home, whichever parent does, you're contributing a lot, probably
more so
than the spouse that's working. You know, you're right. It definitely is an independence thing and it makes you feel better. You know, my wife is now working. When she contributes, she feels better. Even though she should have felt fine raising our three kids,
exactly.
You know, it's just the way the world
works.
Well,
there's such a problem, I believe, with people, women against other women. people, the women who don't want women to, who judge the women who work, and the women who judge the work, who
both
judge
sides
the women.
Of the fence, right?
It's horrible. There's such shame, mom
right.
shame, I think they call it, or
yeah,
something.
Right.
It's horrible.
Right.
But I.
How could you work? How could you stay home?
Exactly.
It's the same side of the different sides of the same coin.
But every family has a different dynamic,
right?
And you have to do what's work. But I have to say, I get a high from spending my own money.
Yeah. I understand
and
that.
I feel great being able to do that.
Yeah, nobody wants to rely on another person.
No.
It's just generally...
Plus, I got married later, so...
You're used
I
to being
that
person.
I went from doing that and then to become reliant.
Right.
There's nothing wrong with it.
No, it's
but
different, though.
Me,
when our parents
different.
Were younger, they were 21. They got married.
Exactly.
They didn't even know anything in the world. It was just a different world.
Exactly.
Than it is nowadays. Okay, so where do you see the business growing and taking it? Do you have any strategic... plans? Mm-hmm. Have you thought about the future?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay,
so
good. Good question.
I did,
then.
Yes. I always have a marketing plan that I'm working with.
That's good. Good to know. So that's almost like really your business plan. It's your working document that says, okay, kind of like strategic planning, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where you sit down and say, okay, I want to be here in a year, 3 years. I'm sure a lot of businesses don't do that.
No, but
so that's
I think
good.
Because I provided that for other companies,
right.
It's easier.
It's a skill that you developed.
I don't necessarily have it in dollar amounts.
No, it doesn't need to be.
But I have it more in, well, volume.
Okay.
So, because like I said, the more reports that we
right,
do.
Right, that translates
less,
into
exactly.
money and profit and so
and
forth.
Because we're a smaller operation.
Right.
As I said, I pay more than one of my competitors. You know, it's basically like Jill's Pharmacy versus Walgreens.
Right. So if you build up your volume to a certain level, now you hit breakpoints and you start to
exactly.
save
because
money.
Exactly. Because I can't. Lower my prices, but I can't raise my prices either because
right.
now I'm competing with people.
Right.
So it's a very hard place. So right. I have to add value added.
Okay, that makes
so
sense.
So that's kind of where this whole educational component comes in. So where I see it is that I have a larger team that we are getting out there and we have a different type of business. So we're giving the same information, but
right.
I like the educational component. I don't have a passion for credit reports.
Right.
I don't go to sleep, you know, dreaming about FICO scores.
No.
And but I like the idea of helping people become independent.
Okay.
Of any whoever they are. And when you see it, when I see on these credit reports, I kind of look at it mechanically. I don't really look at the person. You know, after
right.
a while they all but you see these kids in debt.
Yeah.
And they're working in preschools, and
yeah.
they have hundreds of thousands of dollars for college debt.
I know. That's like
and
a whole other podcast we can do
exactly.
about
so I see
yeah,
that,
debt problems
and
in college.
So I see the educational component.
Right.
And I feel that us teaching an agent or a landlord, they're not going to help their tenant.
Right.
But they're going to help their own family. And I had somebody call me. I had an agent who I work with. She said to me, I went for a refi and I got rejected. Can you, and here's what they
like
sent me.
Like figure out why,
can
right?
Can you help me figure out why?
Yeah, a lot of people don't know. They just get rejected.
So I said, send me your report. And it was a personal thing. It wasn't a business. I did it solely
yeah,
as a
just to
favor.
Help them, right.
And so she didn't know about a collection she had on. She didn't know. Oh, she had...
She didn't even know what the collection was for?
You can't tell because it will say medical...
It's like coded almost,
well,
right?
Well, medical because of HIPAA laws like you had
right,
said.
Right, they don't put...
They don't say, but it can say a lot of... It will say if you have one for a bank
yeah.
or a credit card or
okay.
Verizon.
Right.
And so we went through it and one of the problems was she had opened credit cards... for department stores for her daughter.
Right.
And her daughter took the bills, so they were in her name, but they went to her daughter's
right, but
home.
Right, but her credit report.
And her daughter missed a couple of payments.
Yeah, didn't think it was any big deal.
And it didn't bother her, so I said to her, take back the bill.
Right.
She said, but they're hers. I said, no, they're not.
Well,
they're yours.
They're hers if they're in her name.
Right, and the same thing with student loans.
Yeah.
People give their kids, I don't know how they do it now, but it was like a book, like a coupon book.
Right.
So they give the kid the coupon book.
Yeah.
The kids don't... Kids, I feel like I'm old, but they don't realize the impact.
No, not at all. Did we when we were in our
20s?
No, I remember
they would have in our student union like an Amex or a Sears booth set up and
yeah.
they'd be giving out cards like candy. And you just spent. You didn't realize.
Right.
So
it's like the vape shop. They want to get you hooked.
Oh my gosh.
On your
yes.
credit, you know?
It's the same. Yeah.
Yeah. It's
and
the same thing.
Or just having that spending power, but right. they don't. And they don't realize the repercussions of how long things stay on their account. So that's something that these bigger companies do that I could never do, nor do right. I want to be that. Because, again, I like helping people and empowering. I may not know the person I'm helping with their report.
Right.
But by giving an unbiased view is helping them.
Yeah. They don't realize it, but it doesn't matter.
Right. And it's interesting. So something we also started doing that nobody else does is that if John Smith has his credit run and okay. the local Keller Williams office, the agent says it's not going to work, we'll provide that report to another agent anywhere for 1 month at no fee. Because they shouldn't have to have their credit report run again.
Right, because it hits
because
their...
Because how are they going to get
what does
out
it do? Knocks a couple of points
it
off?
It could knock it's a hard hit.
Yeah.
And it's
because you requested it.
Right.
Yeah.
So we say for 1 month, so if they did it on November 4th, then to December 4th, if they go to another agent and we could verify it's an actual agent and not their sister,
right.
we will send that report to an agent. And this way we know that we're not... You're not going to get out of the cycle if
right.
we keep running these credit reports.
Right.
How is the credit going to get better?
Yeah.
So that's some way I feel that we're giving back.
Right. I think like when you go for an auto loan, they do that. They'll hit seven banks. And you're like, what?
Well, the other problem is you can see that people are going up and down the highway and they have their credit run. People should only have their credit run when they go to either get a loan or a lease.
Right. They got to decide.
When that final car.
Right. Make your deal first.
Yes.
Do the whole thing first and then do it.
Because
right?
you can see on how many, where they've been. I could see that they've been up and down Route 17.
You can tell.
You can totally tell.
Looking for a car. And everywhere they're going, oh, we need to run your credit.
Right.
They don't think it's any
say,
big deal.
Oh, they've probably been rejected.
Right.
All those times.
Yeah. Yeah, they can't tell that it was because you were shopping around for the car
exactly.
and then you made different decisions.
Exactly.
Just
same
looks like.
Thing,
that makes
same
sense.
Thing with the credit for the rentals.
Right.
It will show us. It will show our competitors. So we decided that was a business decision. I've had to run our reports. People will come back and I'll get the same report and I'll get a request.
Right. And you know it's the same person.
And it's the same person. So I won't.
Yeah, you don't want to run it
I'm
again.
Not gonna, so I lose $22. It's
yeah,
not,
big deal.
I'm going to still be able to pay my mortgage that month.
Yeah.
And I know
more
that
goodwill
it's not going to
hurt.
Exactly. It'll come back to me.
Yeah. So it's interesting because you kind of fell into this business and it fit with what you're doing. But now... You've really come like a more of an educated consumer where you almost can do credit counseling for people if you ever wanted
right.
to, and you certainly for yourself, because I think a lot of the stuff we do these days is driven by credit and your availability of credit. It's kind of good to know both from a business standpoint and a consumer standpoint about what you're dealing with. You know,
right.
I mean, I help people all the time with stuff. I really don't know what I'm gonna have to call you.
Excellent.
I got clients with credit issues. You just don't know why
you
they get
know.
Rejected.
And they don't know, and they don't want it to make it easy for them to read.
Right. No, that's
it's
how they make their money,
to.
Right?
It's not supposed to.
Yeah, I know. It's yeah, that's unfortunate. So. All right, so I've probably taken up a lot of your time today. Let me see. We've been recording for 45 minutes,
okay.
something like that. Is there, now this is, it's your platform, so it's your day in the sun. So we're talking about entrepreneurship. Is there anything that you're interested in pursuing or your thoughts about stuff? Because I know on the phone we started talking about you love entrepreneurship.
I do. I love entrepreneurship. I love the platform of podcasts.
Okay.
As I was telling you, I have two ideas for
okay.
podcasts.
Good. Well, I'll put this out there. So now you're committed to
I'm
doing
committed.
It because you're putting
so
it in.
I have two different ones.
Voice.
I have worked on a list of people. I feel that everybody has a story.
Yeah.
Whether it's embedded in a story about business.
Right.
And it's not just the people we see on television. It's not just
no,
the celebrities.
No, I have local people. I don't have any celebrities, not yet.
Not
if
yet.
You know any celebrities? I'll
maybe
take
I'll
one
be
in.
A celebrity.
It'll expand
for you.
The right. It'll expand my readership, my listenership.
But I love hearing people's stories.
Yeah.
I love hearing, you know, at the chance of being corny, I love the journey.
Yeah.
And I love hearing about happenstance and about how things happen. And I believe that everybody has a story or how they rise like the phoenix from the. I love those stories.
Yeah.
And I want to share stories like that. I also...
Do you want to do it like me? You want to interview people. You want to find people
exactly.
and tell their stories.
So
yeah,
I
listen to
lists.
A lot of those kinds.
I have lists. I also love, again, the podcast platform, and I critique the podcasts.
Yeah.
And even on my Instagram account, I'll promote. People don't even know it. I'll put on a podcast that I've listened to and
you liked it, tag and you want to promote it. Yeah.
And I kind of want to be the talk soup. You remember Talk Soup on E?
Yeah.
Where they would talk about all the talk shows? I want to be the talk soup of podcasts.
Yeah, you could do that. There's a couple out there that do that.
Yeah, so I love many. That. And there are certain things.
Like a podcast of podcasts.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. So I call myself a podcast junkie.
Yeah.
I like I'll talk to people wherever I go, and I always find something interesting.
Well, now you
about
see all
them.
The equipment's basically portable. You can go different places and meet. You don't need a whole crew and a roadie and you know, boom mics and all this kind of stuff.
So I love that type of stuff. I love, you know, when I was working at Bloomberg and I traveled everywhere, I would meet people on airplanes and in hotels. And this is in 2000.
Right.
In 99.
Yeah.
I had a list of people, and I would meet these
There's
people.
There's basically no internet in those days.
No internet,
yeah.
Just email.
Yeah.
And I created a newsletter, my own newsletter, and we called it InFriendNet, way before Facebook.
Right.
And I would connect
people. You missed your calling.
Exactly. That's how you do. But if I just pursued that, I did it for, I think, about, I said, my memory shop. I did it for about 6 months or a year, where I'd send out newsletters. And again, it would be the same type of thing. This was a funny thing that
happened.
Right,
it was just like,
I met this person, but do you know about a restaurant in Toronto?
Yeah.
And I would have Toronto people in this community.
Right.
So I created this. I love the idea of communities being built.
Yeah.
And, you know, we have such far, we're able to go outside our immediate area because of the internet.
Of course.
And
now it's easy.
Now it's easy. But I think there are a lot of different communities that can fulfill that. So that was a big thing. I loved doing that. And that to me is like a predecessor to what I wanted, like a precursor to what I want to do in the podcast world. I always dreamt of being a talk show host. Even when I was at Bloomberg, a couple of times I would commandeer a conference room and we'd be eating lunch, which we were never really allowed to eat lunch anywhere at Bloomberg. But I would pretend I was a talk show host and just interview people about their personal life.
Yeah, well, this is the perfect platform to do it, right?
Exactly.
Because you can't, you know, it's hard to get your own talk show.
And it was fun. I thought I was Oprah.
Right.
So it was awesome.
Yeah, it's funny because it's funny because nowadays, from a marketing standpoint and from a promotional standpoint, because podcasting is nice because, you know, you see a little snippet on TV, but then you find out they have a podcast, the whole interview. Willie Geist does that on Sunday morning or something. It's like 8 minutes on TV.
I subscribe to Willie Geist.
Yeah.
But I have to say he gets great interviews.
Yeah, he gets good people.
But I think, like, I would love to help Willie.
Right.
His interviews, video interviews, are better than his podcast interviews.
Yeah, but they only let you put, 7-8 minutes on TV? They don't let you do an hour.
But I feel that he gets...
Yeah, more out of them.
He gets more. He gets... I don't know if it's his editing or if it's... Like, I feel that a lot of podcasts
need structure. Yeah.
They need a routine, and I feel that... But he's great,
I love Willie.
Yeah,
he's very good.
And obviously, I love the people he gets, and he has very great long form interviews.
Yeah,
and that's what I keep. I actually have a spreadsheet that has all the podcasts I listen to it, and what I like about it.
It's like a religion to you. I'm crazy about podcasts. I'm not keeping spreadsheets.
But because if I'm
going
to do it, I want to do. I usually am very reactive, so I'm trying to be proactive in my life and not be reactive.
Yeah.
So if I'm going to do it, I want to be armed with enough information to do it properly.
Right.
I mean, of course, it's going to change and evolve. And
yeah, you don't want to get to paralysis of analysis.
No.
Right?
But I'm sure that, you know, even in the time that you've had yours, I can see the difference in the growth and change.
Oh, for sure. I mean, we've upgraded the equipment, my style. You get used to things that you want to do with people after you do. But you got to commit to coming up with like a name.
Right. Well, that's actually hard.
Something like that.
The build it, they will come type. Like not that. I'm saying that's the type of thing.
Like
once
it'll
I have
be
a name.
A genesis of
then
itself.
I'll be able to kind of fulfill it.
Yeah. And but then you got to do searches, make sure there's not somebody else out there. I think there are one or two other accidental entrepreneur podcasts. I don't know if they were just like one or two episodes or I never trademarked
the name. Well, that's the interesting thing. If you look on the podcast
directories,
there are people who are doing podcasts in 2016 and haven't done one recently.
Right. Yeah. They started it and then they just dropped it.
And then I don't listen. You know what? Right. I like to see current.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Like, I try and do one, put an episode out, I told you, every like 2 weeks, because it's time consuming. I still have to earn a living.
Right. Exactly.
You know, I haven't been able to monetize this podcast, although I'd like to, but
and
someday maybe.
That.
Yeah. Okay. So someday, you know, you get enough followers and things like that. But at the same token, it does take me time. I've gotten to the point where doing the editing is easier. The equipment makes the feed a lot cleaner. Mm-hmm. I don't have to clean that up. I still got to add the music in the beginning, and I take your opening, and I put that in and do all that. So it takes some time. And then I got to set it up on social media and for launch and when it comes out. So I try not to do more than like every 2 weeks because right. It's just too much, you know, to get it out there. But so that's what you got to do. You got to commit to like a launch date. Like, you're going to come up with a name and you're going to find a guest and you're going to do your first one.
Right.
Get it in the can, and then
well, that's why
put
I said
it out
I have
there.
To have a few in the hopper, and then I will. But I have to. I'm working on my format, and I feel that you know, a lot of like you start out with, you know, what's your background, where you're from, and
right.
some of them I love. They have like quirky questions, or like,
yeah.
you know, what's the last album? Or no, people don't use album. But like, what's the last song you listened to on your
yeah.
phone?
Yeah, I've been guests on podcasts before, and actually, there's a good website called podcastguests.com, mm-hmm. and you can register even for free and get invited as guests on podcasts. You should do that. And sometimes they do. They send me a list of funky questions ahead of time. Some of them are just normal, but some of them are, you know, like, well, if you found yourself in 1492 and, you know,
yeah,
you, what would you, you know, like, yeah, I'm not that deep.
No.
So, all right. So listen, so thanks for coming here. We've
My
spent,
pleasure.
I don't know, like an hour together.
Excellent.
We'll check in with you maybe a couple of months from now. And we'll see how you're doing with your
Great.
Podcast.
Excellent.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Thanks,
Mitch.
Jill.
If you like our podcast, please tell others about us. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, and iHeartRadio. If you like what you hear, please leave us a 5-star review and feel free to share our episodes on social media. If you have any questions or comments, ideas for the show, or you'd even like to appear as a guest, reach out to us by email at beinlaw33@gmail.com. That's beinlaw33@gmail.com. The Accidental Entrepreneur has been written, directed, and produced by Mitchell Beinhacker. If you'd like more information about Mitchell and his practice, you can find him on social media or visit his website at beinhackerlaw.com. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe to our feed to be notified of all future episodes.